You are listening to. First Gen Teachers Lens.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the First Gen Teacher Lens. I'm your host, Mr. C. So in this episode, we take a step back from our book talk series and talk about perfectionism. A lot of teachers deal with perfectionism in their different ways, but there are coping mechanisms. So in this podcast episode, I have A. Grace Martin. She is a wellness teacher who talks about different ways that us as educators, even in other relationships besides teaching, can cope with perfectionism. Stay tuned and don't forget to like and subscribe on Apple Podcasts and everywhere else where my podcast is streaming. Thank you.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. You can find out more at teachbetter.com/podcasts. Now let's get back to the episode.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the First Gen Teacher Lens. My name is Mr. C, your host of the First Gen Teacher Lens podcast. And today's episode is about perfectionism. I have a lovely guest with me. Her name is Grace Martin. Here she is to introduce herself.
Hello, everybody. I'm A. Grace Martin, the Wellness Potential Teacher, and I help burnt out teachers who struggle with perfectionism to master their burnout and become efficient, thriving, high performers.
When you messaged me and I took a look at your page and I was like, wow, she does a lot of stuff with mental health. So I was just like, that's very important, especially with the chaos like that's been going on within the past, I want to say, year and a half with teachers like navigating different learning environments and like also some being parents and juggling that and kind of getting their kids, especially if they had little ones, situated on remote learning / hybrid platform. Was it drove me nuts personally. But in terms of our episode, we're talking about perfectionism. So great, Grace, if you could tell me about a little bit about yourself and then your story about dealing with burnout.
Absolutely. So I'm a mom, and last year when the pandemic hit, I was at home teaching physics with my baby on my hip because I'd just gotten off of maternity leave as soon as the pandemic hit. So It was really difficult to try and juggle all of the things of being a mom, being a teacher, trying to talk about my students' mental health, trying to write everything down at the same time because I'm also an author. And it made me feel like I had to think back to the 2 years from hell that my husband and I experienced when I was a new teacher. And the thing is, what's really important is that my husband was also going through a lot of burnout at that time too, because he was doing his equivalent of a master's thesis and working full time. I was a brand new teacher. I was working 70 to 90 hours a week. Our social life completely disintegrated. We couldn't see friends, couldn't see family because we just didn't have time. Mm-hmm. And that definitely paralleled during the pandemic. Well, we couldn't see friends or family because of other restrictions. And so reflecting back on that time of burnout, it became very, very paramount to say our mental health is extremely important and we do need to talk about it and we do need to really take care of ourselves. Because what happened with our 2 years from hell is that both of our physical health started to disintegrate on top of everything. And once I got to summer after the first 2 years, I literally went and stayed with my mom for a week and said, "Mommy, take care of me," because my body had broken down. I couldn't even move anymore. I had brain fog. I had multiple digestive issues because we've been eating convenience food because you just don't have time when you're that burnt out.
Right, right. It definitely absorbs your life. And then you feel like, I don't know, just for being retrospective, my first 2 years, it feels like you're like developing, you know, your curricula from scratch in terms of like, you know, getting these materials, getting to know your students, knowing what works and what doesn't work in your classroom, and then further developing your teacher identity. That's one thing that like led to, I guess, my burnout at the end of this year. But then this year was a whole nother story, being virtual, and then the adaptability that a lot of teachers had to have. And I couldn't imagine, like, you know, having your baby by your hip to kind of like, you know, teach at the same time. That sounds amazing and horrid at the same time, where, you know, you're basically like, you know, doing multitasking. So I'm going to go into our next question, which is, can you tell us more about how perfectionism looks like as a teacher?
It definitely looks different for different people. And that can be during the past pandemic, not knowing what the expectation was, and therefore not knowing how to be perfect and having that self-imposed pressure of, well, I'm supposed to create all of this from scratch now. I'm supposed to pivot. I'm supposed to do virtual learning. And I don't know how virtual learning looks when it's perfectly running. So how am I supposed to be perfect? Did that cause a lot of stress for you too?
Yeah. I mean, it was a lot of stress because like I'm teaching in New York City, and over here we have one of the highest homeless population. So it was like, you know, being able to take care of that population, and then not only that, but learning the different platforms, right? Because as the kids were going into, I want to say Zoom, Google Meets, whatever platform you use, there are updates continuously updating. Like Google was updating, Zoom was updating. And along with the kids, we were learning. Like I would say this was definitely a learning curve for a lot of teachers. Myself personally, I felt like every day I was learning something new about Google Classroom, Google Docs, Google Drive. And that drove me nuts because like it was like creating everything and then learning this new material, this new digital platform that was like going on. So yeah, it was a lot of like frustrating things that happened. And then like, you know, once like it kind of quelled, like I thought everything had to be perfect. So, for example, like my Google Docs would like, I would make sure that everybody got a copy, then I would mess up and then I would beat myself up after it. So it was definitely a thing that I had to, I want to say, like, reflect upon. And like, you know, stuff happens online. Like there's no control that we have over this digital platform. So it definitely did happen to me. Did you experience something similar?
So, you know, that is a perfect description of what a lot of teachers experienced for perfectionism with workload during the pandemic. So before the pandemic, what that looked like is teachers taking on a ton of extracurriculars like coaching and running clubs. And then post-pandemic, additional behavior management plans, increased academic interventions for the students who have gaps, that inconsistent learning environment, less than ideal conditions, trying to get everything back up to a previous standard of what we had pre-pandemic. So that's an individual self-imposed workload of we want to do such a good job. Some perfectionists come off as more people-pleasing. So that people-pleasing is always going to put the teacher second, because the teacher can never say no. They have to be the person who does it all for all the students, for all the coworkers, for their admin, who give them additional tasks to put on top of their shoulders. And that weight on their shoulders causes emotional overwhelm, because we're also thinking about how our students are trying to handle this, and it drains us emotionally to try and be the best that we can and essentially act as a psychologist, even though we're not trained as psychologists, to help our students through it. Now, perfectionism, again, because it works different with different people, might come off as dreading collaboration and actually not wanting to go outside of that bubble, not wanting to ask for help, because a perfectionist tends to have this idea, if they want something done right, they have to do it themselves. So it's difficult to collaborate with other teachers. It's difficult to work with educational assistants, work in groups, or ask for that outside help, because there's this ego-based work ethic that you have to do such a good job. But but then also compare yourself to how the rest of everyone is doing. And if they're not doing as good as you, well, maybe that's validation that you're somehow being a good teacher, even though you're maybe not seeing the full picture. And really understanding to not project your type of perfectionism onto someone else, because a student who is procrastinating and afraid to start their tasks and start their work could also be a perfectionist because they're terrified of doing anything wrong. So that perfectionism can come up in multitudes of ways, but the underlying commonality is that it's actually a deep set inner belief that one's value is based upon the products they create or the quality of work they deliver.
Right. I want to elaborate on the, or expand my own thoughts on your previous definition, where it's like, you know, the product that we create, right? As teachers, you know, we want to create the best service or learning environment for our students. So I think what happened, you know, especially at the time and when New York City got hit, a lot of schools were like, all right, we have to make it feel like some type of normalcy, right? That is concrete online, which is, it's fabricated. Like, that's impossible, right? How are you gonna replace the actual physical space of a classroom with the digital space? And, you know, all the teachers know this, like, kids have different living environments at home, right? Some may have multiple siblings, limited spaces, right? That doesn't meet the needs of the classroom, right? Where they're distracted and there's all these other background noises, all these other situations going on where in their homes, and then we're focused on, you know, making everything perfect when we are clearly not addressing certain issues about, you know, mental health of the child or even the staff. So that's definitely one thing that I felt was completely honed in on that has to be perfect. You have to create a perfect learning environment if you're online, which is, to me personally, it felt like a bit of a reach, which, like, I didn't know how to communicate, I want to say, to my staff, even admin, because I was trying my best. I guess that kind of, that idea, like, oh, we have to be on the ball, kind of overcame me. Where I think that's a nice segue to our next question, which, what are some tricks to overcome perfectionism? Because I feel like a lot of people have different ways of coping with perfectionism, but it's always good to reiterate some tricks to kind of, you know, deal with it.
You know, as you were talking, what came up for me is there is no such thing as perfect. And when you don't have a perfect benchmark, it gets really stressful. But when you understand that life is messy, and when you understand that you just have to do your best and be there as best as you can for your students, that that's as close as anyone's going to get to perfect, it starts to relieve some of the tension and pressure. So to answer your question, what is the biggest trick for overcoming perfectionism? And it is mindset, mindset, mindset. So I'm going to hit you with a bunch of truth bombs. And the perfectionists might get their backs up against the wall and might not like it very much, because we don't like being called out on our flaws. Mm-hmm. So are we ready for some truth bombs here? First one is to stop wearing your burnout as a badge of honor. Mm. You're not somehow better than everybody else, and this doesn't set you apart because you're so stressed, because you're so overwhelmed, and because you're burnt out must therefore mean that you're doing a good job. That's the first thing. Stop that ego and check it right now. If you're not being paid a world-class salary, which teachers are not, stop making world-class products. When you do that, you assign all of your energy to making the best product, that best Google document, the best formatting, and you use all of your energy on the product instead of putting your energy forward to showing up better for your students. That includes, you know, the fake entertainer idea of, we show up online, we put our great big smile on, like, hey guys, yeah, we're here for you. This is so great. We've got this great energy. But when you are burnt out, you're still acting that, and yet your energy is not communicating it in an authentic way. So even if you think that you're a great actor or actress, your energy doesn't lie and kids see past BS.
Right. Yeah. No, they completely do. It's like, you know, that idea of like, you know, when sharks smell blood in the water, right? Kids know when you're faking it, right? There's always this cliche saying, fake it till you make it. Sometimes I'm generally honest, like over the past year and a half, I kept it real with my kids. I'm like, this sucks, guys. Like, I'm be honest, like this is brutal, because my kids miss, in our district, we're one of the only schools or few that were completely online. Other schools, you know, had that avenue of like hybrid where the kids could like, you know, somewhat interact on a physical basis with their peers. So I just kept it real with them where they were really receptive to that, where it was just like, you know, this isn't perfect, but we gotta do this. And I know it sucks, but like, it's something that we have to do so that next year, you know, you guys further develop your skills based on what we've learned this year. And a lot of kids did gravitate to that. And we had honest conversations like that. Those sidetracks were some of my best lessons, where before we started the lesson, we just talked about it, about what was going on. And the kids were like, honestly, I'm just tired of being online. Like, I don't want to be on a computer anymore. I want to be at school. And it feels weird not to see my friends for over a year. So we just had honest conversation, which is, like you said, like a really good place to start, because kids can detect BS all over. Like, they have a good reading of BS radar.
Yeah. Well, and there is absolutely a place for fake it till you make it. The fake it till you make it is to put you in the right energy that you want to model. So if it's shifting you into a healthier space, that's where that has a really good place, because when we completely ignore all of these issues, that's where fake it till you make it becomes toxic positivity, right? And we cannot ignore the issue. So what you did is you brought up the issue to the surface, addressed it, and said, the reality is we are working within these confines and these boundaries. So let's make the best of what we can within these boundaries. And that's where you could enter the fake it until you make it, not to ignore what they were already going to, but with validating their experiences. So then when it comes back to our tips and tricks of this perfectionism, we need to note, okay, we are showing up with the best energy we can with our students. For you to get that best energy, you need to know how you're assigning your time. So create boundaries around your time, such as giving yourself only 1 hour to complete a task. Stick to that deadline. And that means, as a perfectionist, you might already go to, well, I want to spend like 20 minutes here and 20 minutes there doing this type of formatting. Oh, and I should probably go get some background research for this kind of thing. If you stick to a deadline of 1 hour, then you stick to, I have to get this hammered out and done. And done is better than perfect. So knowing that good is good enough because the task is complete, you can polish it later, but only after you've completed the rest of your to-do list. And by practicing that time boundary, a lot of people come around to the idea of, oh, well, I actually don't need to go back and polish that because I have too many other things that I have to do, and I still have to show up and have this conversation with my students. So tomorrow's lesson, I'm going to take the first 10 minutes to just talk with my students and use that as their emotional health and well-being time before we even get to the lesson. So I don't need the lesson to be polished and perfect. I need to show up with my best energy.
Right. And like best energy and like intentions as well, because like, you know, you can read the classroom, even if you're online, like you can read the Meet or the whether you're on Google Meets or Zoom, you can get a vibe, as like my students say, of like, what is going on? What's the overall sentiment? And like, kids also dish that out too, where it's just like there's awkward moments where you're just staring at into like blank cameras and like, oh, nobody wants to talk. So that's the perfect time to kind of address those issues. And then going into, I have like two kind of like a combo questions, where one is like a sub question. So what are some tricks to overcome perfectionism? And then how can this apply to relationships, and other people.
Okay, so I'm going to give you two tangible exercises or activities, because the mindset piece is crucial and cornerstone, but here's what you could tangibly do. Find a ball. Maybe it's a tennis ball, maybe it's a basketball. Whatever you usually do with that ball, maybe it's toss it up, catch it, toss it up, catch it, toss it up, catch it. Purposely drop it. And that makes you feel, wait, what? What do you mean I need to purposely drop? Purposely drop it. Rolls away, go grab it, pick it up again, start tossing it. Purposely drop it and purposely fail. So I'm literally telling you to drop the ball, because that figuratively shifts your energy into that metaphorical, it's okay to drop the ball mindset, because we can fail forward. So when you do that, you might actually get a response in your brain that's like, this feels uncomfortable to purposely drop the ball. And what I would like you to do to follow up with that is a journaling activity. So go to a piece of paper, grab a pen, and ask yourself some questions of what does it feel like to fail? Or ask yourself the question, if nobody else notices the quality of my work the way that I do, then why do I feel I need to make this better? It's really important to style your question for a journal response here, where you don't need to have a specific answer. So even journaling can be a difficult thing for a perfectionist who's like, well, I'm creating like my own essay here, so I have to have proper grammar and sentence structure. It's free fall writing activity where you just verbal vomit everything onto the page. And it's really important to write it down, because we are so used to typing and we're super fast typers, but when you write with pen and paper, you force your brain to slow down, which shifts you into a mentally reflective mode. So you can keep repeating that question. If no one else is going to notice, then why do I feel like this is so important for me to go through? And as you write, you might come up with something like, I have the feeling like I always need to be my best. I always need to be right. And you can follow that question up with why. Why do you always need to be right? You might not have any answer at all. So I don't know. I just do. Where? Okay. Where else in your life is that the case for you? Where in your childhood did this trait first arrive? Where else is this affecting your life experience? Where is this affecting your relationships with your students? And that can lead to some more insightful question and answers, because the perfectionist might not realize they are projecting their super high expectations onto other people, and other people are trying their best to live up to that expectation. But a perfectionist is never going to reach perfection because it's not existent. So everybody always falls short.
Right. Right. And that makes that, that's completely right. I think that, yeah, we, if you're hitting this idea of perfection, it's unattainable. It's unrealistic goal setting. But in terms of like, yeah, you like you have, I guess you develop, you know, with perfectionism, there's this idea, right, where it becomes this standard, right? And it goes back to like what you were saying before, which is like pretty healthy, setting up a deadline and then meeting that deadline. And like, it doesn't have to be perfect, because like there'll be another day to kind of like like you said, polish it, right? But if we have this overall absorbing idea of like it has to be finite, it has to be completely correct, then that's consuming, right? So again, going back to purposely failing, like it's okay, it's okay to fail, and it's okay to not be perfect, and it's becomes, I think the journaling becomes in a way cathartic, where it's just like you're writing, you know, your sentiment and like how you feel about, you know, whatever you're doing or whatever you're trying to like perfect. And then with the sub question, right, in terms of like dealing with like whether it be relationships, whether in like your workplace or outside of your workplace, how can like perfectionism be overcome, or in terms of that perspective itself? Because like, you know, you mentioned that like oftentimes you have, if like you have like a, you know, this idea of perfectionism, people trying to live up to that, how can that affect, want to say, your relationships in work or just in other avenues? I'm just curious.
Absolutely. So here's the biggest thing with coworkers, is to stop judging. And we all judge. Of course, this is back to you see a post on Instagram, you're like, ugh, I don't like what that person is wearing, or like they probably should have changed their filter or the angle of their face, right? It's natural for us to have those judgments. Those are automatic thoughts. It's what you follow up with that's so important that you stop and be like, you know what? It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. So stop comparing yourself to your coworkers. That includes stop holding a grudge against the teachers who aren't burnt out because you feel like, oh, well, they don't work hard enough and you don't like them because of that. Mm-hmm. Their teaching has nothing to do with yours, even if that lack of dedication makes you feel like you have to pick up the additional slack, mm-hmm. even if you're teaching the same students and they're not getting the support from that teacher they need, so you feel like you have to step up your bar. Stop judging. That's not your place. You have a bubble where your circle of control applies and anyone else's teaching is completely outside of your control. So it's wasted energy trying to compare yourself to those teachers who you feel like are doing less than you. But it's also important to not compare to any other teachers who are doing more than you, who seem more burnt out, because that starts to feed back into the cycle of, well, if they're able to do it, then why can't I do it? And maybe I should be doing the same things they're doing. And like their assessments are really jacked up and they've got all of these amazing things that they've transferred over online. That's putting way too much pressure on your own shoulders. And again, it's a judgment. And it's not going to get you anywhere forward. It's not going to help you with your progress. All it's going to do is hold you back into that same ego-based mentality of you're not good enough. So you need to be a perfectionist because you've got something to prove. Mm-hmm. Now that's in the workplace, but this happens with loved ones too. So I'm going to go use an example with my husband of when setting up my classrooms for any year, when we've moved around and I get into a new classroom, I always get my husband to come join me. He's really tall. He can help me get up and get down off the ladders. And when he does bulletin boards with me, he can't do them perfectly. And this feeling sounds very familiar to other perfectionists of you start to cringe of like, oh yeah, you can't have someone else who doesn't line up their borders perfectly, right? Because even if no one else notices, the perfectionist notices.
Right.
So when I get my husband to come help me in the classroom, I don't focus on those details. What I focus on is, Kate, let's just get the borders up. And then I go to the opposite side of the classroom to survey the work to see if it's good enough. If it looks fine from the opposite side of the classroom, then I have to stop. And instead of saying to my husband, you know, like we could just like move this a few millimeters here, or like, can't you do this a little bit better? I say, thank you. And I share that strategy because it's very tangibly something you can physically do, but it's metaphorical too. Any situation where you're facing perfectionism, take a step back and survey it from a distance. Look at the big picture and remind yourself, if no one else does notice but you, it is not worth your time to change it. And this leads to the argument or response of like, well, I know, and I need it done perfectly because I'm just so OCD. Have you heard that argument before?
I've completely heard a ton of teachers in my workspace say that argument, which is cringeworthy. It's within itself, because like, I don't, the just to kind of conduce OCD to like, it's just me like having to, there are some people out there with crippling, like actual OCD that like hinders their lives. So it's just, to me, that's cringeworthy. But continue, sorry. Yeah.
No, that's exactly what I was going to say too, is that when you reduce a mental illness to a personality quirk, you devalue it. And you're taking away all of the validation that anyone who suffers that is going through. And that affects how you approach mental health with students. And you're actually contributing more to a stigma, the same stigma that so many teachers are determined to counter and say, we need to talk about our mental and emotional health, you guys. This is really important. It starts with you, and it starts with walking your own talk of understanding that your perfectionism is not OCD. It's a personality quirk that is entirely in your control, and therefore you are the author of your own design here.
Right. No, absolutely. And like, again, like, I don't know. It just, I'm still hung up about the OCD comment, because like, it's just, it really reduces like this idea to like that it's a personality thing. When in actuality, it's a serious mental health issue where people do struggle with that. But it comes along with this idea of perfectionism, that everything has to be, as my students say, on point, right? Everything has to be 100%. It has to look aesthetically pleasing to, I don't know, for my example, admin, that like the bulletin boards on the front of the classroom, that has to look aesthetically pleasing because I want to please my higher ups. When you do want to do that, but like it doesn't have to consume you. Like I my first 2 years, I learned like this is not healthy. Like making sure the bulletin boards are like extremely perfect is not healthy, and it cuts time into doing other tasks that like could help me better, or help like me in the beginning of the school year find out like different activities to kind of engage the students. But it's definitely an issue where it kind of consumes me, just going back into the classroom every year, where it's just like I'm like still thinking about it.
And I think there's a piece there about glorifying. So it's like glorifying OCD as, oh, it's actually really high productivity, right? But somebody who suffers from OCD experiences just the opposite because they can't get out of their stuck cycles, right? So I'm thinking the mentality here of perfectionism applied to that interview question of what's your greatest weakness? And you glorify the greatest weakness as, I work too hard, or glorify I'm a perfectionist. And it comes off as this really good quality of, oh, it's my greatest weakness, but it's an interview. So let's still make you look as good as possible. And that is counter to what we've been talking about here. So what is the on point part about perfectionism? Is that letting go of your concept of what perfect needs to be is going to release not only you, but those around you from that too high standard that is unattainable and makes life more realistic so that you can have emotional health and healing in the context of where you're working.
No, right. And that's absolutely so super helpful. And I'm grateful for your tips in terms of perfectionism. Before we go, can you tell the audience like where to find you, what resources you also have for like perfectionism? And yeah, just so we can dive deeper outside of the podcast.
Absolutely. So I'm the wellness potential, excuse me, perfectionism coming out. Now I have to start saying that word over again. I'm the wellness potential teacher on Instagram. I'm Mrs. A. Grace Martin. And here's the thing, if you are willing to learn how to check your ego, if you're willing to learn how to establish and maintain healthy boundaries in relationships, invest in targeted self-care as a teacher, I can absolutely help you. If you've kind of got your back up against the wall during listening to this and you thought, you know what, no, I don't actually like what she's saying. Like, I think it could help, but I can't actually apply it. Don't bother coming to follow me because my positivity is going to definitely be too toxic for you as an individual. If you're willing to change, then please do follow the Wellness Potential Teacher on Instagram, Mrs. A. Grace Martin, and go to the link tree in my bio. I have several videos on overcoming burnout, and I have a full self-care mindset masterclass entirely for free. You can check out all of my resources right through there.
I want to thank you again, Grace, for coming on and for giving us a platform to talk about and a voice about perfectionism, especially when our field has been inundated with so much stuff. Thank you once again. And this is the First Gen Teacher Lens podcast.
Thank you for having listened to the First Gen Teacher's Lens. We'll see you here next time.